Phone the comment line 1850 715 900.
And of course, you can text us on 51551, as many people have been doing. One texter asking, how many doses per horse? Alex in Glastool saying that's in Dublin. I think any trainer who has these drugs on their premises should have their license revoked. Now, earlier this week, the defamation case taken by the American pop star Justin Timberlake and his wife, the actress Jessica Biel, against Heat magazine played out in our High Court. The magazine is distributed across Europe, but the couple chose to fight the legal action here, prompting renewed analysis of Ireland's defamation laws, which some people regard as too stringent. On the line now, media lawyer Paul Tweed, who has represented many people, including this famous couple, in court. Ger Colin, also columnist and former editor with the Irish Daily Star. Good morning to you both. First of all, Paul Tweed, explain to our listeners why an American couple ended up taking a case in our High Court over an article in a magazine that's on sale all over Europe.
Okay, well, firstly, Sean, the offending allegations were published in a magazine that was distributed extensively in Ireland. And in fact, you know, pro rata, there was similar publication in Ireland as there was in England, for instance.
How many copies would it sell here, Paul?
I'm not sure just what the exact number are, but I mean, per head, it would be very similar. I mean, if you walked into any supermarket or roadside service station, you'd have seen a copy of this magazine, the article advertised prominently and headlined on the front of it, and inside there were several pages.
Yeah, the flirty photos now, that rocked Justin and Jessica's marriage.
Yeah. So basically, without going into the detail of the case, the bottom line is that in Ireland, as in the UK, a plaintiff has to establish, firstly, that they've got a reputation in Ireland, which Justin Timberlake obviously has. He's an international reputation. And secondly, that there was meaningful distribution within the jurisdiction, which it clearly was. I mean, it was literally, the magazine was everywhere, and it's a very widely sold publication. Now, you're asking me, why did they sue in Ireland? I'm assuming you're suggesting as opposed to London, for instance. I mean, why wouldn't they sue in Ireland? I mean, the courts in Ireland are just as capable of dealing with these matters as the courts in England. I practice 80% of my media work is from my Dublin office. So, you know, it's totally appropriate that he should sue in Ireland, which he did. We also got the case resolved within a matter of weeks, so it was done very effectively, both in terms of cost and in terms of securing vindication for the client.
And why would they come to you? Why would they come to you, Paul, as a matter of interest? Is it that you have established a reputation, or do you yourself go looking for business? Do you tout for it yourself?
Well, first of all, Sean, I've been doing this for 35 years now. I've acted, excuse me, for many well-known individuals. And as I say, I like to think I built up a bit of a reputation. Whether it's deserved or not is another matter. But, you know, that from that point of view, I think, you know, my work speaks for itself. And I say I expect to be judged on my results, and they speak for themselves. So in the sense that they've come to me, I'm entitled to advise my client as to the appropriate jurisdiction. The jurisdiction is appropriate for them to sue. And as I say, I would emphasise in this particular case, we got the case resolved quickly and effectively. But I would also say, and I want to make this absolutely clear, the largest group of clients that I act for are made up of journalists, investigative journalists, and my principal stance on all this is that investigative journalism should be protected at all costs. I also act for a number of newspapers, a number of book publishers and other publishers. So I act on both sides of the defamation law fence. And I like to think that that does give me some perhaps unique position where I can, you know, pass a reasonably informed comment on the merits of the laws and the ability of an international client to sue in Dublin as opposed to London. And I should say I work out of Belfast and London as well, and there are occasions where it's more appropriate for a client to sue in London or Belfast.
Just one question before I go to Ger Colin, Paul. Are the Irish courts seen as a kind of a softer touch?
Most definitely not. The law in Ireland was changed 3 years ago. We need a situation where I think our laws need to be stronger. They're all outdated now, both in Ireland and in England, with the online situation. I mean, 80% of my cases are now dealt with handling online abuse, online defamation and whatever. So in many ways, the defamation laws are becoming less and less relevant. from the perspective of the print media, which I think the Irish print media is among the finest in the world. I probably read more newspapers, in fact, than most people in the country. But the problem is that things are moving on now, and the difficulty is that while the print media is regulated, while we have the option, and I use this on probably most of my cases now, of going to the press ombudsman and the press council, which we use regularly as a much less expensive option, particularly for members of the public. But the print media subscribe to the ombudsman, but unfortunately, most of the online coverage or the online publishers don't, and that's a problem as well.
Okay, Ger Colleran, I know as an editor you were a stickler for accuracy in your newspapers, any of them that you worked with, be it the Kerryman or the Star or elsewhere. So, what is wrong with a regime where people have been blackguarded by a publication like Heat, as they were in this instance, completely fabricated quotes, along with the headline I alluded to earlier? What's wrong with them seeking justice in this country?
Well, there's nothing wrong. I actually have no particular problem with the Justin Timberlake and Jessica Biel case, or Paul Tweedon, for that matter. I mean, I regard him as a thorough professional, and if I were him, I'd advise them to do the same thing, to come to Dublin, because it's a soft touch. And it represents the pull that is there because of the defamation law regime that exists in this country. It's libel tourism, and it's effectively, I suppose, it's double Irish as far as defamation is concerned. The fact of the matter is that we had reform, so-called reform, of the libel defamation regime in 2009, which was a complete joke. It didn't get to the real kernel of the thing. And the fact of the matter is that Irish society operates under a veil of secrecy. There's a suppression of views, there's a protection of elites and powerful people in society, and this presents itself in terms of the type of defamation regime we have, which is completely anathema to any interests got to do with an open, transparent, modern democracy.
But truth, Ger Colleran, as we both know, as everybody knows listening to it as well, truth is the perfect defence against any claim of libel or defamation.
But you see, there is no perfect anything in life. We know that in order to have a decent conversation about anything, there has to be an allowance for the presence of error. And in fact, error is regarded as a fundamental issue in terms of democratic debate in the United States. They have the First Amendment, and the defamation regime flows from that. We have a completely blinkered view in Ireland here when it comes to robust public debate, which requires the presence of error and allows the presence of error and forgives error where error is corrected. Now, I've no problem about people taking their cases to court where error is involved. People should not be subjected to error and a continual flow of error, but it must be corrected. But I have a problem where it comes to public people, and I'm not necessarily involved. I'm not at all talking about the Justin Timberlake thing, but it just kind of sums up what's wrong with Irish defamation law. We have had no reform. We need a presence for error, and we need a presence for the illustration they have in the United States. They get the central one was Ariel Sharon in that huge case he took against the Israeli Prime Minister. Former, and he took a case against Time magazine, got to do with allegations that he was involved in a mass killing in the Sabra and Shatila refugee camps in 1982. No, he took it to court in America, but he failed because he couldn't prove that there was malice demonstrated clearly by the magazine. That's the type of regime we need here.
Okay, let me put that point to Paul Tweed. Paul, a printed apology arguably should be sufficient for somebody whose reputation has been harmed, an apology and setting the record straight.
Well, unfortunately, a printed apology is no use in the internet world now, Sean. I mean, it's absolutely vital that an apology gets appropriate prominence and is pushed right back down the internet in the same way that the offending allegations have been published in the first place. So, unfortunately, the day of the postage stamp apology is long gone. Secondly, the Justin Timberlake case was not libel tourism. The Heat magazine did not publish these articles in the United States, at least the editions that I'm talking about. So, it's not a question that our clients have to sue where there's publication. Secondly, in terms of the United States, although they have very resolute, as jurors pointed out, very resolute First Amendment protections out there, they also have other protections to balance. For instance, you know, in Ireland, there's no right of publicity. There are no image rights. There's no law protecting image rights. So, and our privacy laws are still very much in their embryonic stage. So there's a balance. So, you know, while the American situation on the face of it seems to be much more tolerant and liberal of publishers, in reality, there is a balance that actually evens things out, which we don't have here. Final point I would make is Ireland is certainly not regarded as a soft touch, although there's been a recent change in the defamation law in England. That law change has been rejected robustly by Scotland. It's been rejected robustly by Northern Ireland to date in any event. And as far as I'm concerned, I mean, whenever I sat on a number of the Ministry of Justice panels considering, when they were considering the reform of English defamation law, and I was actually citing Ireland as a very good example of how it should be done. And in fact, there was a lot of interest and sympathy in that. Unfortunately, it wasn't followed through in the end by the legislators.
But, yes, but, I mean, but the Paul, one you'll have to agree that the costs here in Ireland are absolutely phenomenal, and there are extra costs heaped in respect of defamation actions. And if you take the reality is, Phil Hogan is a major public person. He played a key role in some of the stealth taxes that we have to suffer in this country now. And he's threatening defamation action against Nessa Childers over something or other that she said. Now, the point is, what damage has been done to him, really? He's on 250k a year, plus expenses, plus massive prospects in terms of Irish and EU pension. I mean, we'd all love to be damaged like that.
But are you saying that because somebody is... Jerry Colin, are you saying that if somebody is highly paid or in a high position, that somehow their right to defend themselves is lessened?
No, I'm not. Let's be quite clear on this. I'm saying that people in public positions, politicians, business people who influence people's lives, and journalists too, and commentators, particularly people like you, I suppose, who would have an influential position in Irish society. These people should be separated out from the ordinary folk who go about their business with real work, and they should be separated out for a more robust standard, and they should be required to have thicker skin. And that is not the play. You see, there's a smartening up being done by people with deep pockets and influential people in Irish society to stymie opposition, to stymie questioning, and to stop this nonsense. They don't want anybody questioning what they're at. And Phil Hogan, for instance. I mean, what damage conceivably has been done to him? He has now been instated in a major post out there, and he's claiming that he might have been defamed. I mean, the thing is ridiculous, and it's part
of the
society.
Well, look, that is something that may well be working its way through the court, so we don't want to dwell too much on it. But Paul Tweed, what's your response to people in public positions and positions of influence? But I do consider that what I do to be serious work, by the way. Do you think there should be a different standard applied to them?
Well, I think there are two points arising from what Jura said there. First of all, the flip side of that coin is that, yes, it is very difficult and it's a very expensive forum for the ordinary man on the street to get access to justice. And I believe there should be legal aid for defamation claims so that, you know, the ordinary readership, the reader who has been defamed, should have access to the libel courts in the same way as the wealthy have. And I do think that that is a problem that needs to be addressed, not just in Ireland, but also in the UK. So far as, you know, people, you know, high-profile people utilising the libel courts, the problem is that it is high-profile people like politicians who tend to be libeled more often than the ordinary man on the street, so to speak, simply because of their position. And therefore, like, there has to be some balancing where they have to have, they should be entitled, you know, to have an opportunity to remedy their reputations. But I'm not actually disagreeing with you, Jeremy. I mean, and the point that you're making is that, you know, people, it's wealthy people or people with high-profile politicians should have thicker skins, and that may be the case. I mean, I'm not actually arguing against you.
And you know too,
point.
Paul, that there are two types of people that can take libel actions now. They're the very rich with deep pockets, and people who are people of straw and have ambulance-chasing lawyers running after them for effectively costs. And publications and media organisations are scared witless in respect of people of straw. And what they do is they tend to settle The lawyers know they're going to settle, and the lawyers know that their fees are going to be paid. That's the reality. The middle cohort of people in Irish society are scared away from taking what would be, in some cases, appropriate defamation actions because of the massive sums involved. See the type of money that was involved in respect of the Miss Flynn in County Mayo. I mean, it's scary beyond belief.
That was the Beverly Cooper Flynn case against RTE.
Yeah. No, I don't disagree with the Lacoste element. I mean, and that is certainly a deterrent in one sense. I do disagree strongly with Ger when he says that the press are living in fear of litigation. That's certainly not my experience, or maybe I'm the soft touch here, because I can tell you that what I get back is certainly not an indication of fear. And that would include you, Ger, as well. I'm sure
chasing
you're not really intimidated
and solicitors out there who love this game because they know that there'll be a buckle in the knees of media organisation when they have letters coming into them from people who, even if they win their cases, will not be able to pay the cost.
Ger Colin, on the point you make about people in high-profile positions, and you cited one senior politician, is it not much more difficult for them if a case gets to court to win? Because the jury will consist very frequently of people like your readers in The Star, and they have been fed on a diet of, well, pretty harsh treatment for politicians, certainly in the last 5 or 6 years.
Absolutely not. And I think I'm pretty unique in terms of the reform proposals. I was involved in the reform proposals with Dermot Ahern, who I had good time for, actually. He pushed it as far as he could in the context, but a few years ago there. And I was one of those people who advocated that the fundamental right of a jury to be present, and I have great faith in juries to be present, but I have problems in terms of the awarding of indeterminate sums of money by juries. The award should be left, in my view, to the judge, where the decision of fact in terms of the defamation, it should be left to a jury. And we should still retain a jury because it's the ordinary person in the street that should be entitled to judge in these matters.
Has the Press Council and has the Press Ombudsman regime made much of a difference in your view, Ger?
I think you've a confluence of issues here. I think media organisations have effectively been smartened up and backed off the more controversial issues. That's number one. That has led to somewhat diminution of the number of cases perhaps coming before the courts. And two, I have no doubt about this. The Press Council does take away, let's say, complaints that wouldn't have been defamatory complaints anyway, or complaints about defamation. If there's a sight of money, a pot of gold available at the end of an action, people will still go for the pot of gold.
Paul Tweed?
I would disagree with that. I mean, as I say, I use the Press Ombudsman's complaint procedure regularly, as they will confirm. What irritates me about it is, in a sense, is that the press, you know, tend to want it very much their own way. I mean, I was accused recently of attempting to gag a newspaper because I followed the procedures of the Press Ombudsman, set out the basis of my client's complaint, and then I get met the next day with this, that I'm trying to seek a gagging order. Now, we got a successful adjudication from the Press Council as a result of that.
But what case is that
I don't want to go into the specific details,
Actually, you
sure,
don't, but
I
mean, you
can Google, just you Google gag and
there
you you'll find it all over the place. You'll not too much definitely find that one. But the point I'm trying to make is that I have a lot of respect for the Press Council. I think they're doing a good job. I think there are certain circumstances where, unfortunately, an adjudication which merely makes a statement of fact in terms of accuracy and conduct of the press is not enough, where somebody has been defamed and their reputation pummeled around the world. But you've got to remember, even an article published in any of the Irish papers travels from Dublin to Singapore to LA within a matter of five to six seconds.
We know all that, but I think the residual point, though, is that we don't have a regime in this country which allows properly for error. And error often assists the public debate. And I've often said this before. If you, Paul, are sitting down at a family dinner, or Sean, or anybody else listening to this, sitting down at a family dinner surrounded with people that you love around the table, and you say to them, we will have a discussion now, but it has to be without error, and it has to be within the bounds of judicial proof, how sterile would that be? Similarly, on the macro level, it cannot be sustainable. That society is required to debate public issues and has to have that debate solely based on judicial proof. It's a quite farcical, ridiculous situation.
Right, we leave it there. Ger Colin, columnist with The Star, former editor, and Paul Tweed, media lawyer. Thank you both for joining us.
Today with Sean O'Rourke on RTE Radio 1.